学生英语在线，你想知道的问题你告诉他，你没想到的问题他告诉你。最顶尖的英语专家，最有效的学习方法，雅思托福 GRE 轻松得分没问题。 Question of the day， 大学生英语在线，每天上午6:30，晚上11:00，与您准时相约。
大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the day， 我是 Larry。 又到周末了啊，每到周末我们都会来聊一聊 TED TED Talk， 希望对大家的英语学习有所帮助和启发。那今天呢，我们要讲的这个 TED Talk 的主题是 The State of the Climate， 啊，这个气候的一个状态。那么我们请来的专家老师依然是壮壮老师，老师好。
Hello, and this TED Talk was recorded in New York in 2014. This expert will talk about what we might do about the current climate situation of this world. This expert is a climate economist, 就是他是一个气候经济学者。
气候经济学家哈。
哎，这个比较有意思哈，就是我发现 TED Talk 里边的人他的名衔非常的有创意哈，
对对，
都是咱们没想过的那种领域。
对，他研究的这个方向千奇百怪的，所以他们才能够上这个演讲台嘛，与众不同。
好，哎，The speaker Lord Nicola Stern studies the economics of climate change， 也就是他研究的是气候变迁的经济学。 He is a co-author of the position paperpresented to the UN's 2014 climate summit called the New Climate Economy， 也就是在联合国2014年的气候峰会上，他呢发表了一篇文章啊，就是新的气候经济学啊，这个也很有意思。So what exactly is his talk about? How can we begin to address the global insidious problem of climate change, a problem that's too big for any one country to solve? Economist Nicola Stern lays out a plan presented to the UN's climate summit in 2014, showing how the world's countries can work together on climate.It's a big vision for cooperation with a payoff that goes far beyond averting disaster. He asks, how can we use this crisis to spur better lives for all? 好，所以你看这个人站得还是很高，看得很远。也就是虽然我们在地球面临着气候变迁的种种问题，而且呢是一个国家，任何一个国家单独所不太可能就去解决的，那他就号召呢，世界上的各个国家应该联手去解决这些问题，并且把这一次的气候的危机，作为一个契机来改善我们所有人的生活啊。That's what he means by use this crisis to spur better lives for all。所以这个人呢，他就想，哎，能够把这个事儿呢重新的审视一下，而且他是一个经济学家。好，那咱们来看一下哈，他还提到了其中北京，一会儿在听的时候呢，大家会听到这一段应该倍感亲切。我先给大家露一点，先让大家看看。I first visited Beijing 25 years ago to teach at the People's University of China. 哦，他25年前还曾经来到北京的人民大学去做教授。China was getting serious about market economies and about university education, so they decided to call in the foreign experts. 那当然了，中国呢肯定是很重视市场经济，并且也很重视大学的教育，所以他会邀请外国专家来。Like most other people, I moved around Beijing by bicycle. Apart from dodging the occasional vehicle, it was a safe and easy way to get around. Cycling in Beijing now is a completely different prospect. The roads are jammed by cars and trucks. The air is dangerously polluted from the burning of coal and diesel. When I was there last in the spring, there was an advisory for people of my age, over 65, to stay indoors and not to move much. 当然他说在北京呢，其实骑自行车啊是很容易的，就可以在这个附近的地区去在附近地区办事儿嘛。但是现在说北京已经完全不适合于骑车了。首先呢，就是道路很拥堵啊，他用的词是 The roads are jammed by cars and trucks。其次呢，它也很危险，因为呢有烧煤和烧这个柴油所造成的污染。他说 ,It is dangerously polluted from the burning of coal and diesel. 这个 diesel 就是柴油。
嗯。
并且他说甚至在去年的夏天的时候去年春天的时候呢，甚至连65岁以上的这个年龄的人都被建议最好呢在家中不要去室外进行活动。
嗯，
好，这就是他提的关于这段北京。
我再加两点吧。
你再加两点。
我觉得这个空气质量也是个问题。你骑车就呼吸外面的空气也不太好。
没错。
第二呢，就是这个停车位啊，太缺乏了，导致很多这个骑车不合规，它就停在了非机动车道上，你就没地方骑车了。
没错，把这个道都给占了嘛，是不是？
就是我的观察啊。
你的观察哈。当然了，它后面还有一大堆的这个 fundamental changes and the structure of the world economy， 它就逐渐把这个中国的这个情况呢，一直在这个联系到了 developing countries, poorer countries of the world， 啊，然后就看到发展中国家还有那些穷的国家，以及在它世界上的整个的这个经济方面和全球气候方面所看到的各种情况。所以这个人呢，演讲还是比较好懂。那我们就闲话少说，咱们来放录音。
好嘞。
We're at a remarkable moment in time. We face over the next two decades two fundamental transformations.That will determine whether the next 100 years is the best of centuries or the worst of centuries. Let me illustrate with an example. I first visited Beijing 25 years ago to teach at the People's University of China. China was getting serious about market economics and about university education. So they decided to call in the foreign experts. Like most other people, I moved around Beijing by bicycle.Apart from dodging the occasional vehicle, it was a safe and easy way to get around. Cycling in Beijing now is a completely different prospect. The roads are jammed by cars and trucks. The air is dangerously polluted from the burning of coal and diesel. When I was there last in the spring, there was an advisory for people of my age, over 65, to stay indoors and not move much. How did this come about?It came from the way in which Beijing has grown as a city. It's doubled over those 25 years, more than doubled, from 10 million to 20 million. It's become a sprawling urban area, dependent on dirty fuel, dirty energy, particularly coal. China burns half the world's coal each year. And that's why it is a key reason why it is the world's largest emitter of greenhouse gases.At the same time, we have to recognize that in that period, China has grown remarkably. It's become the world's second largest economy. Hundreds of millions of people have been lifted out of poverty. That's really important. But at the same time, the people of China are asking the question, what's the value of this growth if our cities are unlivable? They've analyzed, diagnosed that this is an unsustainable path of growth and development.China's planning to scale back coal. It's looking to build its cities in different ways. Now, the growth of China is part of a dramatic change, fundamental change, in the structure of the world economy. Just 25 years ago, the developing countries, the poorer countries of the world, were part, notwithstanding being the vast majority of the people, they accounted for only about a third of the world's output.Now it's more than half. 25 years from now, it'll probably be two-thirds from the countries that we saw as 25 years ago as developing. That's a remarkable change. It means that most countries around the world, rich or poor, are going to be facing the two fundamental transformations that I want to talk about and highlight. Now the first of these transformations is the basic structural change of the economies and societies that I've already begun to illustrate through the description of Beijing. 50% now in urban areas. That's going to go to 70% in 2050. Over the next two decades, we'll see the demand for energy rise by 40%. And the growth in the economy and in the population is putting increasing pressure on our land, on our water, and on our forests. This is profound structural change. If we manage it in a negligent or a short-sighted way, we will create waste, pollution, congestion, destruction of land and forests. If we think of those three areas that I've illustrated with my numbers, cities, energy, land, if we manage all that badly, then the outlook for the lives and livelihoods of the people around the world would be poor and damaged. And more than that, the emissions of greenhouse gases would rise with immense risks to our climate. Concentrations of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are already higher than they've been for millions of years. If we go on increasing those concentrations, we risk temperatures over the next century or so that we have not seen on this planet for tens of millions of years. We've been around as Homo sapiens, with a rather generous definition, sapiens, for perhaps a quarter of a million years, a quarter of a million. We risk temperatures we haven't seen for tens of millions of years, over a century. That would transform the relationship between human beings and the planet. It would lead through changing deserts, changing rivers, changing patterns of hurricanes, changing sea levels, hundreds of millions of people, perhaps billions of people who would have to move. And if we've learned anything from history, that means severe and extended conflict. And we couldn't just turn it off. You can't make a peace treaty with a planet. You can't negotiate the laws of physics. You're in there. You're stuck. Those are the stakes we're playing for. And that's why we have to make this second transformation, the climate transformation, and move to the low-carbon economy. Now, the first of these transformations is going to happen anyway. We have to decide whether to do it well or badly, the economic or structural transformation. But the second of the transformations, the climate transformations, we have to decide to do. Those two transformations face us in the next two decades. The next two decades are decisive for what we have to do. Now, the more I've thought about this, the two transformations coming together, the more I've come to realize that this is an enormous opportunity. It's an opportunity which we can use, or it's an opportunity which we can lose. And let me explain through those three key areas that I've identified: cities, energy, and land. And let me start with cities. I've already described the problems of Beijing, of pollution, congestion, waste, and so on. Surely we recognize that in many of our cities around the world. Now, with cities, like life, but particularly cities, you have to think ahead. The cities that are going to be built, and there are many, and many big ones, we have to think of how to design them in a compact way so we can save travel time and we can save energy. The cities that already are there, well established, we have to think about renewal and investment in them so that we can connect ourselves much better within those cities and make it easier, encourage more people to live closer to the center. We've got examples building around the world of the kinds of ways in which we can do that. The bus rapid transport system in Bogota in Colombia is a very important case of how to move around safely and quickly and non-polluting way in a city. Very frequent buses, strongly protected routes, the same service really as an underground railway system, but much, much cheaper and can be done much more quickly. A brilliant idea in many more cities around the world that's developing. Now, some things in cities do take time. Some things in cities can happen much more quickly. Take my hometown, London. In 1952, smog in London killed 4,000 people and badly damaged the lives of many, many more. And it happened all the time. And those of you who live outside London, UK, will remember it used to be called the smoke. That's the way London was. By regulating coal, within a few years, the problems of smog were rapidly reduced. I remember the smogs well. When the visibility dropped to more than a few metres, they stopped the buses and I had to walk. This was 1950s. I had to walk home 3 miles from school. Again, breathing was a hazardous activity. But it was changed. It was changed by decision. Good decisions can bring good results, striking results, quickly. We've seen more. In London, we've introduced the congestion charge, actually quite quickly and effectively. And we've seen great improvements in the bus system and cleaned up the bus system. You can see that the two transformations I've described, the structural and the climate, come very much together. But we have to invest. We have to invest in our cities, and we have to invest wisely. And if we do, we'll see cleaner cities, quieter cities, safer cities, more attractive cities, more productive cities, and stronger community in those cities. Public transport, recycling, reusing, all sorts of things that bring communities together. We can do that, but we have to think, we have to invest, we have to plan. Let me turn to energy. Now, energy over the last 25 years has increased by about 50%. 80% of that comes from fossil fuels. Over the next 20 years, perhaps it'll increase by another 40% or so. We have to invest strongly in energy. We have to use it much more efficiently, and we have to make it clean. We can see how to do that. Take the example of California. Would be in the top 10 countries in the world if it was independent. California's a big place. In the next 5 or 6 years, they will likely move from around 20% in renewables, wind, solar, and so on, to over 33%. And that would bring California back to greenhouse gas emissions in 2020 to where they were in 1990, a period when the economy of California would more or less have doubled. That's a striking achievement. Shows what can be done. Not just California. The incoming government of India is planning to get solar technology to light up the homes of 400 million people who don't have electricity in India. They've set themselves a target of 5 years. I think they've got a good chance of doing that. We'll see. But what you're seeing now is people moving much more quickly. 400 million, more than the population of the United States. Those are the kinds of ambitions now people are setting themselves in terms of rapidity of change. Again, you can see good decisions can bring quick results, and those two transformations, the economy and the structure and the climate, the low carbon, are intimately intertwined. Do the first one well, the structural, the second one on the climate becomes much easier. Look at land. Land, and particularly forests. Forests are the hosts to valuable plant and animal species. They hold water in the soil, and they take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, fundamental to the tackling of climate change. But we're losing our forests. In the last decade, we've lost a forest area the size of Portugal, and much more has been degraded. But we're already seeing that we can do so much about that. We can recognize the problem, but we can also understand how to tackle it. In Brazil, the rate of deforestation has been reduced by 70% over the last 10 years. How? By involving local communities, investing in their agriculture and their economies, by monitoring more carefully, by enforcing the law more strictly. And it's not just stopping deforestation. That's, of course, of first and fundamental importance. But it's also regrading degraded land, regenerating, rehabilitating degraded land. I first went to Ethiopia in 1967. It was desperately poor. In the following years, it suffered devastating famines and profoundly destructive social conflict. Over the last few years, actually more than a few, Ethiopia has been growing much more rapidly. It has ambitions to be a middle-income country 15 years from now, and to be carbon neutral. Again, I think it's a strong ambition, but it is a plausible one. You're seeing that commitment there. You're seeing what can be done. Ethiopia is investing in clean energy. It's working in the rehabilitation of land. In Humbo, in southwest Ethiopia, a wonderful project to plant trees on degraded land and work with local communities on sustainable forest management has led to big increases in living standards. So we can see from Beijing to London, from California to India, from Brazil to Ethiopia. We do understand how to manage those two transformations, the structural and the climate. We do understand how to manage those well. And technology is changing very rapidly. I don't have to list all those things to an audience like this, but you can see the electric cars, you can see the batteries using new materials, you can see that we can manage remotely now our household appliances on our mobile phones when we're away, you can see better insulation, and there's much more coming. But, and it's a big but, the world as a whole is moving far too slowly. We're not cutting emissions in the way we should. We're not managing those structural transformations as we can. The depth of understanding of the immense risks of climate change are not there yet. The depth of understanding of the attractiveness of what we can do is not there yet. We need political pressure to build. We need leaders to step up. We can have better growth, better climate, a better world. We can make, by managing those two transformations well, the next 100 years the best of centuries. If we make a mess of it, we, you and me, if we make a mess of it, if we don't manage those transformations properly, it will be, the next 100 years will be the worst of centuries. That's the major conclusion of the report on the economy and climate, chaired by ex-president Felipe Calderón of Mexico, and I co-chaired that with him, and we handed that report yesterday here in New York in the United Nations building to the Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon. We know that we can do this. Now, 2 weeks ago, I became a grandfather for the fourth time. Our daughter gave birth to Rosa here in New York 2 weeks ago. Here are Helen and Rosa. Are we going to look our grandchildren in the eye and tell them that we understood the issues, that we recognize the dangers and the opportunities, and still we fail to act? Surely not. Let's make the next 100 years the best of centuries.
好的，很快呢，今天的第一题演讲我们就听完了。
好，所以看来呢，就是说这个污染这个问题呢，不光是我们国家本身在重视，其实在世界上呢，也有许多专家都在重视，并且像刚才呢，这个专家所提到的呢，我们也可以借鉴一些发达国家的经验，比如说他提到了这个加州，啊，加州他举了一个例子，好，我来给大家说一下哈，嗯。California is a big place. In the next 5 or 6 years, they will likely move from around 20% in renewables, wind, solar, and so on, to over 35%. And that would bring California back to greenhouse gas emissions in 2020 to where they were in 1990. 也就是在这个加州这样的地方，它在未来的五六年中也会把这个 renewable energies, 可再生的能源从使用率的 20% 提升到 33% 左右，这样的做的效果就是使得加州呢，在这个 greenhouse gas emissions 啊，就是温室气体排放到达2020年的时候呢，可以退回到1990年的水平，啊，这样的话呢，它就能够减少这种尾气的排放。所以呢，这个也是我们可以学的。另外呢，他还举了一个在印度的例子，也是一样。所以各个国家呢，其实可以互相联手啊。那当然，这个就和经济有关系了。我不知道大家关注了吗？最近电动的车其实受到政府的大量的鼓励，以电为能源，去像好多电动车在北京摇号这一块呢就有优惠，上牌照也有优惠。
嗯，所以今天我们听的这个 TED 演讲呢，就给我们在环保领域增长了一些知识，希望大家能够通过它学好英语，也学好有关于环保的一些理念。好，那今天的节目就是这一些，感谢大家的收听。最后呢，欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群，群的号码告诉大家，大家记一下，是26305437 0，再说一遍，是 2630-54370，欢迎加入，我们下期节目再见，拜拜。
世界上没有不受限制的自由，
就像你有吸烟的自由，但你不能自由的吸烟，还影响他人的健康。
2015年6月1日，北京市控制吸烟条例正式实施，届时室内公共场所、工作场所和公共交通工具内禁止吸烟。
为了更好的生活，控烟需要全社会行动起来。
讲文明树新风，北京人民广播电台公益广告。
Can't let the music stop.